This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So Dogen starts the Genjo Koan, actualizing the fundamental point. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion, realization, practice, birth, life, and death, Buddhas and sentient beings. I sometimes think he could have just stopped right there. This existing that exists, this arising that arises, this not existing that no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases. So what's not included? You look around in that dynamic. It's all there, right? Nothing is apart from. I've come to think that Dogen is a marriage of Vipassana and Mahayana. Yet he stays true to Mahayana. Well, no, maybe I'm making a distinction here that doesn't need to be made, not about the marriage, but what I was about to say. As myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. So when we look into the phenomena, things as they are, this rising and falling away, we see that, especially, you know, and he started here in the flow of the energies of the five skandhas, form, feelings, perceptions, habit formations, and impulses, looking into that, seeing no I, no you. So when we look at, we have that understanding, we see into that, we understand the empty nature of things. So as myriad things are without an abiding self. The Buddha way, in essence, is leaping clear of abundance and lack. Thus there is birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. I think that that's kind of, when we read this, and it's kind of hard for us to, when and we see that word as all things, or phrase, as all things are Buddha Dharma, something might come up in the mind about purity, in a way. Well, this can't be Buddha Dharma. Delusion can't be Buddha Dharma. Isn't that what we're working to get rid of? It's all Buddha Dharma. When we look around the world today, what's happening? It is all Buddha Dharma, arising from causes and conditions. And the Buddha says, yet by and large, the world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. And Dogen says, yes. Yet, in attachment blossoms fall, and aversions weed spread. No matter how hard we cling to something, it's not going to last. No matter what view, our habit formations, no matter what we cling to, is going to come up against reality. The same thing with aversion. It's going to come up against reality. To carry the self forward and illuminate myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. So, Batchelor says there's, you know, that the Buddha never said that there was no self. He just says when you look into phenomena, you don't see an I or you or me. But here Dogen is saying to carry the self forward. So to carry something forward, some idea of something, something that's contingently configured out of causes and conditions, there is something there. The Buddha wouldn't say whether there was a self or no self. He didn't want us to get tied up in this kind of, to go down these kind of rabbit holes. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Maybe that echoes Bodhidharma. If you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization, and those who are in delusion throughout delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddha. When you see forms or hear sounds fully engaging body and mind, and embodied, engaging with embodiment, you intuit Dharma intimately. Unlike things and their reflections in the mirror, and unlike the moon and its reflection in water, when one side is illumined and the other side is dark. Unlike when things are still in our dualistic sense. To study the way of enlightenment is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So coming back to this, to forget this self, and to forget the self to be actualized by the myriad things. When actualized by the myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. And this from the Buddha. This is how you should train, Bahia. In what is seen, let there be just the seen. In what is heard, let there be just the heard. In what is sensed, let there be just the sensed. In what is cognized, let there be just the cognized. Then, Bahia, you will not be in that. When you are not here, when you are not in that, there is no you here. When you are not, there is no you there, then you are neither here nor there nor in between. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So, we're saying the same thing. forgetting the self to be actualized by myriad things. You don't hear the language that we of the to be actualized by the myriad things in the Pali Canon. I haven't come across it yet. But Dogen stays with it, then there's something there to it. So I thought today, you know, I shared some from Tejaniya yesterday. And I thought I would share some more in the interest of this studying the mind or studying the self and forgetting the self. I hope you hear it. I think you will. It's a lot of echoing. Our conditioned and habitual view of our world is that the process of mind and matter is me. I am looking at me. I know me. Do we hear an echo here, Bodhidharma? I know me, to use the mind, to study the mind. But we can't meditate to develop wisdom using this point of view. If we think of the body or the mind as me, then craving, aversion, and confusion will arise. If we think we are having a good experience, we will start attaching to it, or try to create more of it, which is craving. If we think we are having a bad experience, we will start denying it, avoiding it, or pushing it away, which is aversion. If the mind is spaced out and missing everything, or is busy rationalizing and defending our cravings and aversion, this is confusion. When we look clearly at what is, by practicing awareness with right view, wisdom begins to rise. This begins to give us a clear picture of the way things are, in which the nature of reality toward which the Buddha pointed. This is how to develop right view. Right view is the understanding that mind is nature, not an I or a me. The mind is not a self. It is not personal. It is not me. It's not mine. No one is there. This is right view, and we practice to discover this nature. The moment we get a real answer to a question asked in meditation, when the mind really sees something, it lets go. The mind needs to be directed, and right interest, Dhamma Vichaya, does that. Remember that phrase from yesterday, Dhamma Vichaya? Once you have set a direction of the mind, it will continue in that direction. This is a natural quality of the mind. If you leave the mind undirected, there will be chaos. Never be satisfied with what you have understood. The moment we feel satisfied with ourselves, we lessen our efforts. It's about being steady, so keep going steadily. The Buddha said the energy of right effort is ardent and resolute. To bring forth these qualities while remaining completely relaxed, steady, and calm, that's right effort. There is no need to make objects disappear, and it is irrelevant whether they disappear or not. You are observing because you want to know and understand the nature of all phenomena. This is right view and right attitude. He's referring to objects. These are thoughts of the mind, sensations of the body, perceptions of the world, emotions, moods, etc. When I say do the work, what I really mean is simply step back and allow the mind to do its own work, which is meditate. This is what the mind does. This is its nature. When the mind is relaxed and spacious, it becomes easier to observe thoughts, sensations, perceptions, emotions, and other objects of the mind. The mind does its own work through recognizing, being aware, knowing, thinking about the practice, and being interested. If you identify with this process, it becomes very complicated. But if you just recognize that the mind is doing these things and making certain choices, it is easy to observe and investigate how the mind works. When the mind becomes balanced and understanding, understanding arises naturally. I am not meditating, but meditation is happening. I'm remembering a phrase from Suzuki Roshi. Zazen, you don't set Zazen. Zazen sets Zazen. At that time, the understanding becomes deeper. We're just seeing and acknowledging what is already happening. So I'm going to go back to Siegel, close out there. The brain is a system, and it's part of a larger system. A living system must be open to the influences of the environment in order to survive. And the brain, or we could say the human system, is no exception. The system of the brain becomes functionally linked to other systems, especially other brains. The brain is also dynamic, meaning that it is forever in a state of change. An open dynamic system is one that is in continual emergence with a changing environment and the changing state of its own activity. So when we think about this something called self, this interdependence, this interrelation, this system, the system's dynamic. The brain is a relational thing. It's always the system. The mind, he talks about the mind, including the brain, the autonomic nervous system, neural pathways extending throughout the body. It's always engaging. Right now. Right now, what's happening, hearing, listening is intimate, right? Where is the separation? So what is this self? Is it just this skin back here? And so he comes, you know, his recommendation for us is mindfulness. Being mindful involves a way of paying attention on purpose to present experience as it emerges moment by moment without being swept up by judgments. But then we encounter that when we're mindful, being present to the changing experience. The changing experience is going to stuff in us our habitual patterns that we've been talking about that constitute this idea of me and you. They're going to get kicked up. Without being swept up by judgments. If, depending on how you've been conditioned, how your house has been built, that may not be very easy. But it's part of the arising experience. We'll probably identify with these old patterns. So seeing into these and not identifying with these old patterns, leaning into them, spending time with them, not ignoring them, pushing them away. So, in your practice, judgment comes up. Oh. So, someone in my Zen group was saying, you know, recently, you know, oh, here's my old friend. How can I help you? What do you need? It's like being with somebody who's hurting, right? What do you need? You know, the Dogen goes on in the Genjo Koan to say, you know, as the self and other drops away, the world really opens up. The richness of the world that we've been closed off to really begins to open up. And, you know, we spent some time the other day with the bilateral brain, looking at the dynamics of the bilateral brain. And then yesterday we talked about, you know, well, this tendency, well, we, you know, we talked about the relative and absolute. We can't exist without the relative. We can't exist without the left brain. Dynamics. But as I pointed out yesterday, we tend to really go back to that, but we can't do without it very quickly. And, you know, Dogen says, you know, to be actualized by all beings. And I, you know, Shinshin Ming, In all the world of things as they are, there is no self, no non-self. If you want to describe its essence, the best you can say is not two. In this not two, nothing is separate, and nothing in the world is excluded. The enlightened of all times and places have entered into this truth. In it there is no gain, loss. One instant is 10,000 years. There is no here, no there. Infinity is right before your eyes. The tiny is as large as the vast when objective boundaries have vanished. The vast is as small as the tiny when you don't have external limits. Being is an aspect of non-being. Non-being is no different from being. Until you understand its truth, you won't see anything clearly. One is all, all are one. When you realize this, what reason for holiness or wisdom? The mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought, all striving, is perfectly at peace. For it is there, for in there, there is no yesterday, no today, no tomorrow. Again, it seems it's echoing that Bahia. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, she, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, she, he doesn't love. So, for me, that's an encouragement. How far, where does this take us? The coming back to trust. How can we live in the world but yet see how far this takes us? To not be caught up in the worldly, not to be taken over by the worldly. I think that's our challenge. To see, to realize the beauty of this practice. So, thank you all. Thank you all for being here this week. How much time do we have?
7 minutes.
So, any questions? Yes.
So, thanks so much for the talk.
Could you speak up just a little
bit? Thanks so much for the talk. And whenever I hear Xing Xing Min, it crosses my mind that it's very modern in its core, in terms of it's so transcendental, and it sounds like something for modern physics even, like quantum superposition or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Non-binary, non-dual, non... And it's like ineffable, right? And I was wondering how the ancient people were able to come to this, because their world seemed to be so small and they didn't have all this knowledge that modern scientists have. How is that possible?
Yeah. I won't jump into that one quite right away, but I want to open that up to you all. What do you all think? I will say this, that what you just shared has taken me down a lot of rabbit holes.
Well, I was taken by when you said
Yeah, like you were talking to yourself, saying, what do you need? Yeah, I had a friend say, you know, when you go on an airplane and you hear a crying baby, my first thought is, get me as far away from the crying baby as I can. And, but his response was, no, Tim, you're the crying baby. So that thing you said where, you know, what do you need? Like, where does that come from? That comes from out of the self. You know, it's a kind of, well, I guess it's a self-compassion. But all of my training was kind of contrary to that.
Most of our training has all been contrary to that.
Yeah, so this kind of opening up that you're talking about, what allows that to just naturally come up? I suppose that could be on a quantum level.
You suppose what?
I suppose that could be on a quantum level, this thing that's just coming up.
Well, we don't have to go there. I mean, things are happening on a quantum level, but really we don't have to frame it that way. What we're hearing is when the selfing falls away. The selfing falls away. So selfing is, get me as far away from that screaming kid as you can get me. That's selfing. When that falls away, and it's a natural reaction, because fundamentally the system is reacting to a loud noise and how it's been conditioned to react to that. And so there's that primal reaction to it, and then there's a storyline that comes up to it. Screaming kid. Just like we, you know, in the situation at Tejaniya we read yesterday, hearing kids' noise, hearing kids' voices outside the meditation hall came across as upsetting, annoying. And then it started hardening into other stuff. When he investigated, he saw how it started hardening into other stuff. And then seeing into it, saying, ah. And then when we see into it, all we have to do is just take some time, take the step backward, shine the light in, to pause, to see into. And then, as Tejaniya says, things begin to shift naturally. And when things begin to shift naturally, you know, the selfing begins to ease. So that's a moment of forgetting self. Self dropping away. And then self and other falling away. And then compassion arises. The heart opens up because it's freed of these restricted habitual patterns. It opens up. Over and over, each time this happened, is a moment of awareness. Instead, you know, that could have been a cycle of samsara keeping you in something, refusing to let the system open up to influences. But it was interrupted. That was interrupted. Now something else is being reinforced. Another muscle. Okay? And as Tejaniya says, the more we do that, the more the system orients that way. So it's a moment of rewiring. And I'm really coming to the sense that this rewiring of neural pathways that Siegel talks about, with awareness, neural pathways are rewired. And my sense is that at a certain point, that comes to like a tipping point or something. It begins to, it reaches a point where it gains its own momentum, because there's been enough of it happening. if I ever get a chance to talk to Siegel. I didn't have this awareness in one workshop I was with him at, but so I couldn't ask it, but I will ask if I ever get the chance again. I'm going to jump off. What's your name?
Mila.
Mila?
Mm-hmm.
Mila, I'm going to jump off, take a leap here with your question and see if I get any tomatoes thrown at me. I really think that over time, as we evolved, becoming more and more left dominant, it shuts us off to that. The indigenous literature I read, whether coming out of Asia, here in North America, whatever, there's that awareness. They're just all in tune with that. And all the literature, and Tyson Yunka Porta and others, they're saying it's not cultural appropriation. They're saying, get with it. So that's what this old guy has to say on it right now. Thank you for the question.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.